This is the final whistle on Ocean FM. On this week's programme, Peter Keating shares his story of beating cancer and now taking on an Ironman triathlon in Italy. Ray Gallagher on a long association with Sligo Rovers, which has just seen him named as the club's new president. And Dennis Irwin joins the Manchester United celebrations in Sligo as the local supporters club celebrates its 40th birthday. And you're welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan, and here are the contact details if you want to get in touch by text or WhatsApp. It's 083 3500 530. By email, the address is sport@oceanfm.ie, and you'll find us on X as well, @OceanFMSport. Well, in 10 days' time, Dublin native Peter Keating, who's made Castletown in Drumcliff his home for the last 15 years, will dive into the water at Emilia-Romagna in northern Italy to compete in a half Ironman triathlon. He's doing it to raise money for his local soccer club, Yates United FC, where Peter is a coach, and for the Irish Cancer Society. 4 years ago, Peter was diagnosed with testicular cancer. We'll come to that in a moment. Today, Peter is also a member of the Sligo Triathlon Club. Eight of his clubmates are going to join him on the half Ironman circuit in Italy next weekend. This week he's been chatting to Ocean FM Sport about his story and first about where his interest in triathlons began.
I think I hit my early 40s and hit that midlife crisis like so many people these days. And I bought a bike on the Bike to Work scheme, and I was very stop start, I suppose, at the time. You know, go out for a ride on the bike and do nothing for the next month or so. So a good friend of mine, Stephen Daly, he recommended the men's initiative with Sligo Tri Club. I couldn't actually swim a length of a pool, so I wasn't too keen initially, but I joined the men's initiative. I don't know exactly when, it was 7 or 8 years ago now. I did carry, saw that through, did the event on the last day. Loved the buzz of the whole event, even though I still couldn't really swim that well, and joined Sligo Tri Club. I've been a member ever since. So spent, I suppose, the next 12 months or so forcing myself over to the pool 3 or 4 mornings a week before work, until I finally kicked in you know, was confident enough then to do longer distances and stuff. So that's where I suppose it all kicked off. But the men's initiative was definitely a starting point for me.
Just on the swimming part of the triathlon, that for a lot of men and women puts them off triathlon if they don't feel they're a good or a strong swimmer. You were in that boat, but you did have a moment, and I hear the swimmer say there was a eureka moment in the pool one day or one morning where it starts to click. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've tried to advise others as well. My eureka moment was I believed it dawned on me that I was trying to get to the other end too fast because I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And one morning I said to myself, it's not a race. You know, just take it easy. Don't kick like a madman. Go in, just kind of swim nice and easy, nice and steady. And before I knew it, I was at 10 lengths, 11 lengths, 12 lengths, whereas up to then I could struggle with 1 or 2 lengths. So, that was definitely my eureka moment. And that is my advice to others is, you know, don't try and get there fast. De-stress, get down, relax your body, and, you know, it'll come, it'll click in. Plus, there's incredible coaches with Sligo Tri Club. You know, so if you stick with those people, there's a number of different swimming opportunities within the Tri Club with great coaching. So, you know, listen to those guys as well. But yeah, there is, yeah, for me, that eureka moment was great.
So all's going lovely triathlon-wise. Your swimming's improving. You're getting a real taste for this sport. And then in 2020, COVID hits.
I like everybody else, I was probably at my fittest at that stage, looking forward to racing that summer. I'd actually signed up for a race in Cork that year. I probably wasn't fit enough to compete in that, so happy when it was pulled with COVID. But yeah, it kind of killed my training and my momentum, and you know, just not having any goals or targets going forward. Yeah, it was a tough time, COVID, for everybody, I think. The gyms closed and all of our coaching closed. So yeah, I tried to do a little bit of running, but not great at that time.
And there was to be another bump in the road for you shortly afterwards. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so 2021 comes around, and I suppose we were in between lockdowns. The gyms were reopening, so I was delighted to get back to Sean Flannery Fitness in Raccormick. And next thing, I felt an unmerciful pain in my back. A little bit different than before, and it warranted a trip to the GP, which is very non-typical of me. But I went to the doctors anyway, and we kind of laughed about that I'd overdone it at the gym and that I'd pulled a muscle or something. And over the course of the next 10 days or so, I had three more visits to the doctor. You know, I just knew there was something a little bit wrong. I knew there was something a little bit different. I knew there was something, you know, that wasn't muscular going on. So I was sent away with some sample plan to see what was actually going on. The pain was probably in around my kidneys, if I can describe it as best as there. So kidney stones was mentioned. So I had a letter for A&E on a Monday morning, and that night I was ambulanced into Sligo General. The pain had got so severe that night. So that was the start of what was next to come, I suppose. I spent a week in Sligo General. There was an awful lot of conversations, difficult conversations. The CT scan showed that I had what I now know was an 8.5 centimetre mass in my back. The lymph nodes beside my kidney is where it was kind of stemming from. And I was told at the time that, you know, we're looking at possibly sarcoma here, or lymphoma. But by the end of the week, it was diagnosed as stage 2C testicular cancer, testicular seminoma. And that was, I suppose, another eureka moment for me. I didn't know testicular cancer could spread. In my ignorance, I actually didn't know it could spread. So stage one, testicular cancer is local, obviously, and when it's caught, it's treated very quickly and successfully, thankfully. Stage two is a little bit more difficult because it has got to the lymph nodes in your abdomen beside your kidneys. Stage three is your lungs, and stage four is your brain. So I was on stage two, and still, I was told straight away, still very treatable, still very receptive to chemotherapy. But it was going to be a hard few months ahead, which is what happened next.
So that put, I'm guessing, cycling, swimming, running on hold.
Yeah, so it was the end of June 2021, and I immediately went into 4 months of extensive chemotherapy, where I was in hospital for a week at a time. I switched my care to the Beacon in Dublin, but I was in there for a week at a time, chemotherapy, and then 2 weeks at home. Testicular cancer chemotherapy is called BEP. There's three different drugs, extremely aggressive on the entire body, but extremely effective. So you kind of have to balance it and take the rough with the smooth. So following the 4 months then of chemotherapy, I had surgery. And then in November of that year, I was given the all clear from cancer. The tumor had disintegrated, etc. So that was the start then of recovery from chemotherapy.
Just before we get to the all clear moment, how did you cope physically and mentally with the treatment process?
Physically, it was the toughest thing, obviously, that I'll probably ever go through. You know, with, as I say, the aggression of that chemotherapy, obviously I lost all of my hair. That includes eyebrows, eyelashes, everything. I didn't think of that before, but yeah, it does. I lost fingernails, toenails. I got neuropathy in my feet and my hands, which is a nervous condition where you're getting constant severe pins and needles and numbness. And the exhaustion and nausea was off the charts. Mentally, funny enough, from day one, I was absolutely perfect. And I put that down to my fitness going into it. and my mindset going into it. I knew that there was a 9 out of 10 sufferers come through this. So I knew that the chances were very, very high. I mean, I'll take those odds. So mentally for me, absolutely perfect from day one. I had very few wobbles. I had a couple, but very few. The toughest part for me, I think, was the worry I had for my wife and my kids looking at me going through that and what was going through their minds, plus my family in Dublin, plus my wife Denise's family here in Sligo. Mm. It was tough for them to see this process, probably tougher for them than it ever would be for me, to be honest, yeah.
Describe the all clear moment.
Yeah, it was nice. My oncologist is a man of few words. So I was sitting in the Beacon and he was doing the rounds and he came to my bed and he with his team around him and he said, oh, that's gone. There's very little left there on the lymph nodes. And I said, well, what does that mean? He said, I said, what's next? He said, well, next is goodbye. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, that's scar tissue. You're fine. And that was just, and he walked away to see this next patient. So, yeah, a man of few words, but I don't mind that because he does what he does and he does it well. So, yeah, an incredible moment for me. I still had surgery to face. A month later, they gave my body a month to recover to then go in and with some surgery. Yeah, it was a wonderful kind of celebration. You know, Denise and I, and we celebrated well. You know, we went away and we had nice meals and stuff. So my immunity was still rock bottom from the chemotherapy and COVID was still an issue. So we couldn't be stupid because we wanted to keep well for the surgery. But yeah, a wonderful moment. It's funny, you kind of see and hear other people, you know, right at the start when I was told the diagnosis and right at the end, neither was as big as maybe I've seen others. You know, it was, I've always been kind of very focused and steady mentally. It is what it is kind of thing, you know. I got it. Okay, how do we deal with it? We dealt with it. Okay, what's next?
So having come through, Peter Keating, the rigours of cancer treatment, chemotherapy, recovery, etc., you decided in January of this year to put your body through the rigours of an Ironman triathlon. What's going on here?
Well, I have to correct you. It's a half Ironman, right? But so, yeah, that was 2021 when all the treatment finished. I was told, you know, don't overdo it in 2022. Let your body recover. It's been through hell and back. So I took 2022 off. 2023, I had a torn rotator cuff in my shoulder, which I had repaired, and that knocked me back another 6 months. So after 3 years or something of nothing, I was turning into a bit of the pre-40-year-old slob again, and I wanted to very much get back into something. And I wanted a target and I wanted a goal. And I suppose because of what has happened, I wanted something big. So I spoke to a good friend of mine, Kieran McMorland, and he recommended the half Ironman in Italy. It's a fabulous race and a great location. So I signed up for it. I suppose I wanted a target. I wanted something to keep me focused. And then, you know, primarily I'm doing this for me after everything that's happened. And then I thought, well, you know what? I could benefit others here as well. So that's why I'm fundraising as well as hard as I possibly can. But I think it's just been, I suppose it's a line in the sand moment, perhaps, for me over the last 4 years. I keep saying that. I keep having line in the sand moments. Maybe it's not my last one, but it is certainly at the moment my last one.
So remind people listening what the half Ironman consists of.
So it'll be a 1.9 kilometre swim in the sea. Anyone who knows sea swimming, it's a different sport than pool swimming, right? So for me, that'll take anywhere up to 45 minutes, even up to an hour, I don't know really. Then out of the sea, onto the bike for a 90 kilometre cycle. So that'll be in and around three and a quarter hours. And then off the bike and then a half marathon, 21 kilometre run. The biggest challenge, I suppose, will be that, you know, it's forecast to be about 25 degree heat. So that run in those temperatures at the end of that process will be really, really challenging. So that's what it is. It's about 6 to 7 hours. That's, well, I say that now. But yeah, that's kind of in around the range that I'll be targeting.
You won't be on your own because you'll have eight fellow Sligo Triathlon Club members who are doing the half Ironman as well. Training wise, do you feel ready?
No, I do actually. I do. Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. There's a WhatsApp group with the nine of us that are going to Italy together. We've been a huge encouragement for each other over the last few months, and we've had a few training sessions together over the last couple of weeks especially. So yeah, I bought a training plan online and I started it on St. Stephen's Day last year. And when I say last year, as in just Christmas gone, it was a 39-week plan. It just happened to fall on St. Stephen's Day, which was my first training session. I've trained 6 days a week since then. Unfortunately, I got a bout of pneumonia in June, which knocked me back about 6 weeks. That's another thing from the chemotherapy. It reset my immunity to absolute zero. So every single cold and sniffle that comes into the house, it's an issue. And it developed, unfortunately, then as far as pneumonia. So that knocked me back. So I'd like to be further on in my training. I'd like to be better prepared, but I've put in the hard work. And I'm confident I'll get through it. I'm not going to be breaking any records. But at this stage, you probably heard in my voice, I'm carrying a head cold again at the moment. So I'm confident I'll get through it.
It's an inspiring story, Peter. Remind us of what you're raising money for doing this half Ironman.
So, you know, as I said, I wanted to use this opportunity. I thought it was a great opportunity. So I've got two chosen organisations, I suppose. One being a charity, the Irish Cancer Society. They're an organisation that I didn't use myself at the time through my journey. I suppose I stumbled upon their website a little bit late, but I've done an awful lot of work with them in the last 3 years. I've done an awful lot of talks and other fundraisers, they really need awareness. You know, 95% of their funding comes from fundraising. So they're an incredible organization. So, you know, I'd recommend anyone who has a cancer journey themselves or in their family to get onto cancer.ie and have a look at their website. There's fabulous resources there. And then secondly, I'd like to, throw some funds together for Yates United Football Club. So I'm a coach, a volunteer coach for the under 11s team there. This club it's a wonderful club. There's loads of great clubs in this community, and we're blessed with fabulous clubs. Yates United really could do with an astro pitch. Now, you know, what I'm fundraising is not going to get an astro pitch, but we have to start somewhere. So yeah, we're looking for the community to get behind. But I was determined from day one of my fundraising efforts to say very clearly and very honestly to everyone, you know, every penny that is being raised will be split 50-50 down the middle, and all of the expenses incurred to actually take part in this event will be covered by me and my family. So every penny is going to one of these two wonderful causes.
You've packed a lot in, or a lot has happened, Peter, in the last 3 or 4 years, on and off the bike, on and off the football pitch, but you're back coaching, you're back running, training. Has your attitude to things changed in any way finally?
Yeah, I think so. I'm probably not as cranky or as it's funny when you come
through. You rarely strike people as cranky now.
You should see me at home. It's a different story, but it's funny. You come through a journey like this and you think you're not going to stress about the stupid things anymore. But life comes back around and you very much get into the normality of daily stresses and daily worries and things like that, which I suppose isn't a bad thing. But sometimes you have to kind of take a step back and ground yourself and remember, you know, what's really important. So yeah, my attitude has definitely changed in a number of things. And I do try and, you know, try only worry about the big things, because, you know, the little things will take care of themselves, you know. And I think I've probably got a little bit more patience around, you know, the kids and even the coaching and everything else. And I appreciate life. I appreciate it a lot more. And that is one of the things about the half iron next week, that you know, it's going to be an incredibly emotional kind of journey for me when I'm on it. But I'm looking forward to it, and appreciating every day.
That's Peter Keating of Yates United and Sligo Triathlon Club. He takes on the half Ironman on Sunday week, the 22nd of September, in Italy. And the money he's raising is going to be divided evenly between Yates United FC and the Irish Cancer Society. If you'd like to read more, check out Peter's GoFundMe page, which we'll share on oceanfm.ie later this evening, or search for Peter Keating and fundraiser online in any search engine, and that will take you to the page. So a league run-in of seven games to go for Sligo Rovers, beginning with Friday night's trip to Shamrock Rovers. Coincidentally, there's a connection between that game and our last story. Peter Keating's son, Oran, will be on commentary duty for Ocean FM on oceanfm.ie this Friday night from Talla Stadium. The friendly with Celtic sold out within hours of tickets going on sale on Wednesday. And Rovers have also recently appointed a new president, former Rovers chairman Ray Gallagher. He and new vice president Seamus Cummins both took up their new roles in recent weeks. Well, we sat down with Ray a few days ago to discuss what close to a lifelong association with Sligo Rovers has been like. Ray is a native of Aconry in South Sligo. So how does he remember his Rovers love affair starting out?
I'm not sure. I think my sister brought me to a match in the showgrounds. I don't know what her interest was. It wasn't really football. But she brought me to a match when I was only 10, 1947. Sligo Rovers and Bohemians. No, Drumcondra. And from that, I developed an interest. And in school holidays, different things, I'd cycle the 18 miles down from Aconra to Sligo. And when I was there. And so I suppose from that it developed. So I was coming down regularly. And it made you look like a kind of a rebel in a rural parish to be going down to the soccer matches, you know, at that stage, like, you know.
Why a rebel?
It was all GA. And you were talking about this foreign game, like, you know, and the barracks game, like, from the British Army and that kind of thing, like, you know. So it was an unusual, like, I was the only one, I'd say, from the parish coming down to see football at the time.
And from that first Rovers Drumcondra match, were you hooked straight away, or was it a gradual thing?
It's a gradual thing. I started coming down to them, like, and you met someone. I got to know Charlie Courtney at some stage, I'm not sure why. And, you know, it was nice to know someone there, and you got to know a few people when you were coming down. And, you know, it was just 18 miles from home. It was a nice cycle, and you kept in touch with it when you were at school, like, you know, anything that was on the radio. And what do you call them every Sunday night? The amount of quarter seven, what's the name? They used to have soccer survey.
Okay, right.
Every Sunday night. So you were glued into that, like, you know. So I suppose that's how it started, like, you know.
Did you play soccer yourself?
Badly. I'd say no. I don't say anything about it. But I know I was working in the north of Donegal in the early 60s. And we were messing around. Now, I never trained or anything, but you'd get an odd game, even though you weren't around a lot of the time. Like, you know, if they were short, someone to make up the side there. And we'd have the teams that you'd be playing with or playing against. You'd see an odd young fella that was about three times better than anyone else. And I'd be writing a note to Charlie to come up here. There's a fella who'd do very well at Sligo Rovers. And of course, the only merit that fella had, that he was three times better than people that had no merit at all. Like, you know, Charlie was very decent. He never told me to stop or anything, but he never said anything to look at him. You know, so that was the early days.
And in terms of being involved in administration at Rovers, at what stage did you get sucked into that side of things?
There was a man here in town, at the mayor of town, Jimmy McGoldrick, and I was friendly with him, and he had a newspaper shop here in town, and he knew I was a strong supporter or visitor to the showgrounds, like, and that, and he had got aware of a move that was afoot to get Sligo Rovers out of the showgrounds, and that to be a centre for riding, for horse riding and show jumping and that kind of thing, like, you know. And that, and the deed was up. That was 1965, 66. The deed was up in 68, and it wasn't going to be renewed, you know. And I remember he had a certain amount of information, background information from legal stuff that he got his hands on. And he gave me copies of it. And I remember it was Albert Higgins down on the farm in Dunelly, or baling hay, and telling Albert about this, like. And Albert was 10 years younger than me. I'd been mid-20s that time. He was only a teenager, like. But he told me about the supporters club and to come in. And you know, they'd be very interested. And they were in Willie Kelly's barbershop, like, you know, that meeting there where the waiting room still is, like, you know, there. And Willie was chairman and Brendan Byrne was secretary. So it kind of started there. And they were very interested in this aspect. And we kind of moved to do it. Now, we got Rovers interested, but they didn't have any money to buy the ground. So from that we got on, and it's a long story now of developing the ground and taking it over. But we succeeded in, I joined the myself and I don't know who it was, Martin Keaveney, I think, joined the management committee in late 66. And 66, and we're there in 67, yeah. So we're there for the start of the professional end of it, but I hadn't an awful lot of, then my interest was the one topic, like, you know, the ground. And by 68, we had the ground bought. We had the Vernon estate in it, which is the part the pitch is on. And then it was easy to buy the other one, because one was kind of entangled with the other, like, you know. So we got the two, got the both sides of the ground for $2,500 each at the time. Which was
$2,500.
$2,500 each, but no, each now, $5,000 altogether for the Campbell and the Vernon estate, like, you know. So
in terms of a community purchase, that must be one of the best pieces of value going in the history of Sligo Town.
I would like to think it was valuable anyhow, like, you know. But then the ground, we went down without knowledge of our own solicitor. Not that there was anything wrong with our own solicitor, but the solicitor dealing for the Mrs. Chadwick from Red Hills in Surrey that owned the ground was an unusual man, and he didn't like other solicitors. So we went down on spec, and we succeeded in convincing him that he should sell the ground, give him a guarantee, we'd give a lease to the Show Society, like, you know, and that. And we had fellas like Albert then that was on both the Show Society and Rovers Committee, like, you know.
And were you in those negotiations trying to persuade this guy to give you the showgrounds?
Myself and Brendan Byrne were the ones to put it together, and the secretary and the chairman, John Fallon and Jimmy Gibbarton, came with us. So that was the delegation.
So how did you persuade him?
Well, Brendan had everything on the zoning from the county council, and we had a thing from auctioneers showing the value of land, that with the zoning it was only agricultural land value. But it was obviously worth more than agricultural land. So we went to a thing that was maybe twice agricultural land value at the time, you know. And we told him, you know, we were straight with him. And he said he liked our approach. And he sent us down to have lunch on him and to come back in the late afternoon. And that he'd have been in touch with the thing, or he'd have tried to get in touch. We'd come back, he told us he was prepared to accept it. That wasn't the end of the story. There was a lot of little twists and things after that that had taken a long time, do you know, to get into. But the worst of it then is Paddy Moran, of course, was a great man to have around the ground. He was a great man for raising money as well as everything else, like, you know. And I brought Paddy into the ground, so I just say I contributed more than anyone, because I brought in Paddy Moran and he contributed more than anyone. So as the person that brought him in, you know, to the great thing. But Paddy on several times when we were in trouble, and that was why on the third time we nearly lost the ground through losing to the banks, like, you know, that we decided that no, we'd put it into a trust and got enough money to take Sligo Rovers out of the trouble they were in to pay off the bank. And we bought the ground and put it into a trust owned by the community. And we were just the trustees. And that's the start to what's there now, which was probably a good thing. I doubt if the ground would be there if it wasn't put into a trust.
Well, being part of the team that got the showgrounds to become part of the community is one of your obvious highlights that you'd look back on. What, when you think back on your Sligo Rovers Association, what are the other highlights for you that come to mind instantly?
Well, the development of the ground is obvious, like, you know. And, like, it's just one of the nicest grounds in the country. And, like, the present committee are doing fantastic work. As you're well aware, they're well on their way to drawing down big grant aid and doing a lot of work themselves on making it one of the finest grounds in the country. Well, it's one of the finest as it is, I think, looking at all the other grounds, like, you know. But the finest, I'd say, without any, you know, that it's full ownership by the community. It's a great thing for the community to own a ground like that, like, you know. And it does give life to the ground itself. Like, there'll always be a club if there's always a ground, you know. And what, there's no other club in the country can boast of anything like the same thing, like Shamrock Rovers does, because the county council have taken them over as a godchild, kind of, you know. But other ones, there's Bohemians probably get a grant as well, but they have sold part of the ground that I'm sure they regret now. We resisted at all times before it became a part of the trust, and certainly after it. There was every year there was people trying to get things, surely over the boom time, that we were a hindrance to progress. The fact that you had a old crowd there that wouldn't see progress at all, and the ideal thing was to build on the ground and move the showgrounds to Ballysadare or Ballygawley or somewhere, like, you know, and that. But that would have been a tragedy if that had happened. When you look at it now, when you look at the developments that the present committee have planned, you know, yeah, and the development that have taken place, and it gave a great thing for great people, you know, to be involved in. Like, the committee, we had great people on the development committee, like, you know, Kevin and Noel Scott and all the lads like that, you know, working on it. And different things then, that now we have Vincent Lally come in. They look at all the developments in Pioneer, like, the committee themselves doing things. Seamus Cummins, that was honoured with the other night, he was responsible for, well, part of the responsibility for building the original dressing rooms that became obsolete then, but compared to what was in it, they were state of the art, like, and the Jinx's Avenue stand, you know, and things like that. And Seamus then was there as a chairman at a time that was very difficult. There was a lot of politics within Sligo Rovers Committee, and Seamus's diplomatic approach, like, was able to steer the club through a very difficult time then, like, you know. And so there were great people like that coming along. Paddy Moran, of course, was the best of all. Like, you know, I really look on Paddy as a kind of a saint, because he could do anything, and he had the ability to develop money and develop to bring people along with them, things like that, you know. It was, so you met some great people in it, but you, those people involved and what they're doing. And, like, if you take it, Sligo Rovers now, there's, we have people that give out about Sligo Rovers, we have people that are mad about Sligo Rovers, but they're all talking about Sligo Rovers. You wouldn't go into any canteen anywhere in the country now during the season that there isn't talk, you know. Even the 7-0 draw that was all talk, the fact that they're able to bounce back, things like that. But it's given a great focus for people. And, like, there's men and women now, and to see women's football there. What I always, and it never happened in my time there in management or anything else, that we always tried to get a good underage structure and to get a thing. And we're always prohibited with the kind of structure that was in football here in time. Now look what they're doing there, like, you know, with the academy and with what they're doing with the girls' football. That's improving all the time. Obviously, things have started, like, you know. Isn't it great to see it, you know, when there's so many negative distractions for youth, to see the number of people that are in it there, both the interest and the involvement and everything, in a community-owned setup, like, you know, it's very satisfying. Not for me, for everyone in the town, everyone involved, like, you know.
You were chairman of Sligo Rovers for several years in the 1990s. I'm guessing you held several different club officer positions. I don't know if you were secretary or treasurer at different stages. You were deeply involved for a long time, and you were the club's representative on the FAI National Board for a good number of years in Dublin. So you would go to the capital to bat for Sligo Rovers, and
from memory, I think that was a challenging role to have, I'm guessing, from time to time, to speak up for the Western Seaboard clubs.
Oh, it was, and we made use of that. Well, it was more, because when I joined it first around 1990, I was 20 years there, like, and I was 12 years on the board, like, you know, and I was on the finance committee and the audit committee before there was trouble, I hasten to add. But we had a great team here. I was never secretary. I was chairman and vice chairman and joint treasurer at times. Mary McGowan for a lot of it. And we're very lucky. Mary, first-class person. No one knows football and the league and rules and anything. And no one is more diplomatic, you know, in getting them. But when you were there and you had a great team behind you, Fergal there and different ones, you know, there, they were totally backing you. You know, it was a great thing. But when we went up first, you were being thrown crumbs by the FAI. But we changed that. Do you know?
How did you change that?
Well, we had it first of all, we stood up to it. Our first thing was when they were looking for, they offered a club that was transferring an amateur player with the rules at the time didn't allow any fee, but they decided that allow a fee. So we fought that for a number of years. And I remember at times saying, well, the rules, you know, trying to stand to the rules and being told, you don't worry about the rules. We'll change the rules if you want to suit it. But we were so strong there, not just me, but there was backups from different committees and things, that we didn't allow them to walk on us. And we got to a stage that we were so successful in that they didn't try to walk on us. You know, after time. But we still never fell out. We were very popular at league level. Anything we ever went for, that we needed the support of other clubs, we got it. You know, while I was there, I was never beaten on a vote for anything, except once. Ollie sidetrapped me onto the finance committee once.
This is Ollie Byrne of Shelburne.
Yeah. He caught me by surprise, like, you know, and got... But he was very quick to proposed me then for the international committee, you know, for a representative, which I wasn't interested in because it involved a lot of travel. And as I was doing between forestry and everything, I had enough travel, you know, that I was away from home enough without any more. So I only stayed a year on that. But I know he was trying to get something through the finance committee, you know, that I didn't fully agree with. I was friendly with Ollie, but there were things you wouldn't agree with Ollie. And he knew I'd be opposed to it, like, and I'd be a strong voice opposed to it. So he had a meeting and decided that, no, the finance committee, our representative in the league, should be all accountants, you know. And so he had canvassed a lot of people and sold the idea to them, like, you know. So to the only time in the 20 years that I was ever, any time that I was ever beaten on a team, but I was caught by surprise. The league had two or three representatives on the finance committee, like, you know, two, I think it was, and I didn't get the two. That was the only time. I was waylaid other times, but I was never defeated. Do you know, even when there was only small representation from league at AGMs and that, I was supported by the rest of the 56-man council. So it was, at least they didn't mind people standing up to you if you were constant about your views and straight on them, like, you know.
I'm wondering, Ray, as an administrator, whether it was locally here in Sligo during your time on the Rovers committees or in Dublin batting with or against the FAI board as the need arose, were you able to enjoy football, or did the administrative part consume you? Were you still able to enjoy a match and sit in the stand and actually enjoy the reason we're all there?
Well, as long as the result was right and as long as there was a good gate and there was money, you know, I suppose your priorities was the thing, because the big thing when you were there was the Friday. There had to be wages every Friday, like, and as wages kind of increased, it became difficult. When we changed to the cooperative in 88 and were kind of out of football, there was no money to start football or anything then. Lucky enough, the ground was already in things, so that wasn't in any danger. But there was then we started, remember, with the young fellas around the town, great young fellas. We didn't win a match, but we were never beaten too much. And Jerry Mitchell and David Pugh were the, managed it for pittance, like, you know. The team, the turnover for the year was €9,000. £9,000 was it then, you know. And but then it got up. But I remember the Friday. I thought Fridays came three or four times a week because you just bred, had a breath at lunchtime on Friday. God, we have met that when the next Friday was a choppy again, like all over again. And when the gate was good, you saw things going, you were working into the second half, you saw 20 minutes, much like I'm seeing now because I'm tied up, I only see 20 minutes of a lot of games, like, you know. But as long as things were going well and the results were all right, and you got to look at it, I enjoyed it then, you know, because your priorities were different.
Well, I'm thinking as I'm listening to you there, some things haven't changed because we're chatting here in 2024, and this week the Dundalk manager John Daly has revealed that his players haven't been paid yet this week. So that precarious nature for League of Ireland clubs still continues to a degree.
Well, it does, but I want to say this about Sligo, for every group that was in it, and it was a miracle every Friday. But from the 88, when the co-op took over there, there never came a week when the players weren't paid. How it was managed is a different thing altogether, like, you know. But I never saw a time when they weren't paid.
You're still involved with the club to this day, and now you've been appointed club president. What does that honour mean to you on a personal level?
Well, in a way, I'm kind of overwhelmed with it, like, you know, is that I don't take honours easy. I'm kind of a bit overwhelmed with them or that, but it is a great honour that you be. I've been out football for a long time, and that, you know, I'm in touch still with them, like through the trustees. I've been in touch, and we're, you know, but I haven't been on management now for years, like, in that, and I haven't been on the FA. I'm a life member of the FAI, but I haven't been on any committee on it for over 15 years now, like, you know. But it is a great honour that, you know, that I look on it, and that, and I'm a life member of the FAI, so, like, between the two of them, I'm quietly very chuffed about it, but I'm not a big one for blowing my thing on it.
I understand that you're a modest guy, you're a kind of a behind the scenes man rather than a front of house. That's the way you liked to be.
Behind the scenes, you know, and I don't like, I'd keep away from publicity unless it's for, you know, that was when you were chairman, that you had to be there to move things and to be out of things. But I'm an awful lot happier in the background and, you know, helping out with the.
But you still have a great passion for the club, you're still a supporter.
Asher, the club, you couldn't in Sligo but have a passion for the club. Like, you know, it's a huge thing in nearly everyone's thing that I'd say other people couldn't understand, like, you know. But it has been a big part of one's life, in time-wise and interest-wise and everything, like, you know. And you know, if you go down the town and you run into someone, you know what you'll be talking about, you know. And that, like, you know. And so, like, from that, it has been a big part. And to be, you know, honoured like that, you have to take it, you know, that I wouldn't say much about it, but you have to be really a bit chuffed, you know. And I am, and I'm very grateful.
Sligo Rovers' new club president, Ray Gallagher. Let's finish with the Manchester United Supporters Club Sligo branch, who've been celebrating their 40th birthday this week, first founded back in 1984. It's been an important focal point for United supporters in this part of the world. And last Sunday night, the Sligo branch hosted a birthday celebration in the Sligo Park Hotel. The special guests of honour, Old Trafford's stadium announcer Alan Keegan and former Manchester United and Ireland fullback Dennis Irwin. Ocean FM Sport called into the park to grab a few words.
I actually don't do that many. Tend to kind of just do the odd couple every now and again. Great that I'm up in Sligo, though. It's 10 years since I was here last, 10 or 11 years. Hospitality up here has been great. We've been really well looked after. And what a crowd tonight as well. 240 odd in there. That's just great to be back.
As a youngster, did you ever get a chance to play at the showgrounds in Sligo growing up, through school or a junior club or anything like that?
No, not at all. I probably travelled more with my hurling teams and Gaelic football teams at college more than anything else.
You haven't lived yet, Dennis, if you haven't played at the showgrounds yet.
Well, I played 10 years ago, but not when I was growing up. I played at Croke Park, but unfortunately I played at Turner's Cross as well in Flower Lodge when I was young. But that'd be about it. I like any young lad growing up in Cork in the 70s, I wanted to be a hurler. And I used to travel around watching Cork up, particularly in Munster, which was brutal back then and still brutal today, which is good to see. But yeah, it's great, absolutely great that I'm up here in Sligo. As I said, I don't do too many of these, and been really well looked after, and I think it's a great night.
It's a Sunday night at a back-to-school time of the year, but a full ballroom here at the Sligo Park. It gives you a sense of the passion and affection your club holds in this town.
Yeah, I think when you play, you're aware of how big the club is, but I think you're in a bit of a bubble where you're just concentrating on playing football and just kind of game-to-game kind of thing. I think it's only when you step away from that and represent Manchester United or come to events like this, that you realise that how big Manchester United is and how much it means to people who support Manchester United. And when you think of it now, it's been a tough 10 years, tough 10 or 11 years since Sir Alex retired. And yet, the growth of Manchester United, and I think the Sligo branch will echo that as well, and the amount of members that they've you know, come on board in the last kind of 3, 4, 5 years. There's something beautiful about it. It's a huge club. It's a club that's renowned throughout the world, going through a difficult time at the moment, but we'll be back.
You brought a wingman with you to the Sligo Park Hotel, Alan Keegan, the voice of Old Trafford, the man with the stadium microphone. Did I read correctly, your first gig in Old Trafford was a testimonial for this man?
Yeah, it was the start of it all. In fact, we were talking about it today, Austin. I've got the best job in the world. My first game was August 2000. It was Manchester United versus Manchester City, and it happened to be one of United's greatest ever players' testimonial, Dennis Irwin. And ever since then, he's been on 10%. He should have signed up for that. Yeah. We were talking about it today. But yeah, Dennis Irwin's testimonial, and listen, it was life-changing for me. The greatest job in the world next to yours, Austin, and it's just been brilliant.
Well, I was going to say to you, if you can't play for Manchester United, being part of the match day experience is a close second.
I'm very fortunate because for anybody who's a match-going supporter, I actually stand in front of the dugouts, and that's a bit special because a lot of the other stadium announcers, they tend to be up in a PA room somewhere in the stadium, but I've managed to sort of keep myself there for the 25 seasons that I've worked at United. So it's been interesting right from the beginning with Sir Alex in the dugout, and now you've got, like, I'm in front of the away team. I've got a little lectern with pads on it, and you hear the away team. So yeah, it's been a privilege and an honour.
And is there a sense of pressure that you kind of set the mood, the tone of the stadium?
Well, I think one of the things with Old Trafford is it does it itself, you know. I mean, obviously some games are bigger than others, and the atmosphere, you know, depending on who we play, it doesn't need me as such, you know. I like to think I add to the occasion, you know, and I always think to myself, if it's your first time at Old Trafford, what are you going to remember? So when I do the first introduction, I always try and make it special, as if it was the very first day, Dennis Irwin's testimonial, or the first Premier League game I did, which was Newcastle United. My first two goals were Ronnie Johnson and Andrew Cole. So I'm always aware of that first welcome in the afternoon, or, you know, before the kickoff, where I always sort of think, is this the first time anybody's been to Old Trafford? And I try and make them feel very special.
Dennis, let me give you the last word. As a retired footballer now, what's it like being a Manchester United supporter these days rather than a player?
Well, obviously, after the success we had under Sir Alex, I think we knew it might be a difficult few years after that, but I don't think anybody realised how probably difficult it has turned out to be. And we've had good moments within that 10 or 11 years. We've won cups, you know, League Cups, FA Cups, Europa League Cups, and all that. And at times, it's always felt like one step forward, one step back. But that the club's changing a little bit. Obviously, new owners come in, a part owner, Sir Jim. I think he's done good things with the football side of it, which might take a bit of a while to come true. But we're forever optimistic, we're forever hopeful, and hopefully the manager, the present manager, will go on. And, you know, he had a great first season, tough season last season, probably saved by winning the FA Cup. But hopefully we can move on. We had a tough day against Liverpool last Sunday, but a big couple of months coming up. It really is a big couple of months to get up and running again and put us up there, because we need to be at the top table. We need to be playing Champions League, and we need to be competing again.
Francie Tighe, chairperson of the Sligo branch of the Manchester United Supporters Club. 40 years is a long time, but maybe it's gone in a flash. But a nice birthday to celebrate tonight.
Ah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant for the lads that founded it 40 years ago. I'm involved for the last 30 years ago, since I went to my first game, getting tickets through the club. Been involved heavily over the last 10, becoming chairman now this season. So delighted with it, delighted to put on this event here tonight. Thrilled to have Dennis and Alan Keegan over. It's great for the lads from the branch and so on to enjoy it, you know.
And the affection that there is for this club in the Sligo area, it's very evident here tonight by the size of the crowd, regardless of how things are going on the field of play at Old Trafford.
Absolutely. It's huge. We used to, brief history, we used to have members of about 200-250 members. After COVID, 2 years ago it went, we had 457. Last year we had 725 members, and so far this year we're at about 695. And we're not ripping up league titles and so on, you know, that. But the amount of young people are contacting me, say they're young lads of 8 to 10 to 14. He's mad on United, how about getting tickets for a game and so on. So there's another generation of United fans coming through.
Francie Tighe, chairperson of the Manchester United Supporters Club Sligo branch, speaking at last Sunday night's 40th anniversary celebration night in the Sligo Park Hotel. A reminder, finally, that The Final Whistle is available as a podcast each week on oceanfm.ie or wherever you get your podcasts. Simply search for Ocean FM Sport or The Final Whistle to find it. We're back with you next week, same time, same place.